Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Absentee ballots will soon hit mailboxes just as another legal battle begins related to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s request to take his name off the ballot. Plus, more communities are deciding to not use ballot drop boxes for the November election. Coming up, what's behind the trend? And Governor Evers touts his sweeping proposal for the University of Wisconsin system. We have more on the fate of his plan. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for September 20th.
Hi, I'm Emily.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
All right, let's begin this week in Rewind, but we're first going to start with the latest in legal battle related to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s request to try and seek and remove his name off Wisconsin presidential ballots. So the latest that we know of as of Friday morning is that Wisconsin Elections Commission has asked the state Supreme Court to immediately step in and decide the fate of RFK Jr.'s bid to remove his name. Now, it comes after Kennedy filed an appeal on Wednesday after a Dane County judge earlier this week rejected Kennedy's request, citing state law that only allows a candidate to be removed from the ballot if they die. First, before we dive into where this can go from here, let's just hear from the Dane County judge earlier in the week, basically stating that if Kennedy really wanted to remove his name, he should have done it many, many weeks ago. Let's take a listen.
Petitioner argues that if his name remains on the ballot, some voters might be confused whether he is still actually a candidate or is endorsing former President Trump. This may be so, but any such confusion does not translate into a constitutional right to have your name removed from the ballot. The bottom line here is that Mr. Kennedy has no one to blame but himself if he didn't want to be on the ballot. He either knew or should have known that Section 8.35 sub 1 is clear regarding the mandatory nature of inclusion on the ballot if all statutory requirements are satisfied. For all of these reasons, his request for a temporary injunction is denied.
We've talked about this before, JR. You know, there are tens of thousands of absentee ballots that have already been sent, already been printed. There's actually voters right now that we saw in these court filings that have ballots right now in their hands. So the main argument for many clerks and election officials is, how do we have tool dueling ballots if this lawsuit were to succeed? If the state Supreme Court steps in inside, you could have a ballot that has maybe a sticker over Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s name, and mine doesn't.
So here's your scorecard. Dane County judge says no. Kennedy goes to the Second District Court of Appeals. Department of Justice representing Elections Commission asks the Supreme Court to take over the appeal directly, petitions the Second District or files a motion to stay briefing. Second District Court says no, we're not going to do that. And so now you've got the Supreme Court asked to take over the case. The Second District, with a briefing schedule, final one's due by late Friday afternoon, and then we don't know. So the appeals court could rule at any moment about what it's going to do. Supreme Court take over the case at any moment if it wants to. And logistically, we have a problem. So as you mentioned, 4 million ballots printed, probably at least 400,000 out already in the mail, hands of people. In Kennedy's filings, he argues that, look, this isn't that big of a deal. Like, we don't have to reprint anything, just place these stickers on there and we'll be good to go. The one's already out, not that big of a deal. We'll take care of the rest of them and get those stickers on there. Let's worry about that first. Could be a problem. In talking to attorneys, they are somewhat skeptical. The courts are going to say, yeah, we're going to have two different kinds of ballots out there, one without his name, one with his name. That's a challenge. Kennedy's arguing, though, that this really isn't that big of a logistical nightmare because the state has had for 50 years an option to place a sticker on a ballot if somebody dies. One of the problems for Kennedy is there's no provision in that law to extend it to somebody who wants to off the ballot. He argues, though, the courts have these very flexible powers to expand that beyond that. Now, if you are a conservative, and the Second District Court of Appeals is a conservative court, three of the four judges are conservatives, you don't often want to expand beyond the language in the law. But we've been surprised before by the courts, so we'll see. I don't get the impression this will be done after they weigh in. More than likely, they're going to try and go to the state Supreme Court. the other federal courts. We'll see. But every day this goes on, there are more ballots out in the hands of people. It creates more of a problem. Also, Kennedy keeps saying, well, it shouldn't be a problem with these ballots if there's stickers on them, even though he's just saying that machines have been tested to see if they can actually work. Because remember, if you get your ballot absentee, it's folded a lot of times. The folds can be problematic sometimes, depending on how it's folded. Like, there are all kinds of issues with these machines. They're kind of they're pretty sensitive, obviously, to make sure the ballots are counted correctly. They haven't tested like the weight of a sticker. If it would throw things, would it gum things up? Would it slow things down? Would it cause problems counting? Kennedy argues, well, you should have been testing that last 2 weeks. We should know for sure what's going on. But again, there are always logistical problems for Kennedy to overcome with this request. Could it happen? Sure. The attorneys I've talked to so far are a little skeptical he's going to be successful in this legal battle.
Right. And it's important to note that he has been successful in other states, mm-hmm. North Carolina, but there are different laws. Our law, which the Dane County judge says, clearly indicates you got to die, basically, to get your name off the ballot. It's almost too late to do this. There's also, beyond the fact of many ballots already printed in the hands, clerks talking to them again this week, they have all these deadlines they have to meet. So it's not like they can hold on to these ballots and wait in anticipation of this ruling. There's nothing preventing them from sending out them early. And there's another federal deadline on Saturday where they have to get them out to military and overseas voters. So the timeline has been dwindling for a very long time now. But I think more clerks just want answers so they can almost go on throughout their day and start a very busy election season ahead of them. All right, talking about those ballots, we also just want to highlight how more municipalities are kind of joining in on opting out to use absentee ballot drop boxes. I looked into this in specifically in Milwaukee County this week. If you can take a look at your map, there are 6 out of 19 communities in Milwaukee County alone who have taken action either through their common council, at the local level, or it is really just up to the clerks themselves if they decide, we're not going to use these. Dodge County, too, this was a story a few weeks ago, but once again was in the news this week. Their entire county is not going to be using them in any municipality. And it comes after the Dodge County Sheriff actually got involved and encouraged clerks who at first wanted to use them, and he insensibly convinced them, maybe you shouldn't use these because do you have security cameras, is his argument. Do you have ways to monitor that recording so we can maybe look back and see who is putting the ballot in that drop boxes? This goes on to the argument that we heard back in 2020, where former President Donald Trump was spreading falsehoods and unfounded claims that ballot drop boxes led to widespread fraud. He still does that on the campaign trail, and it's worth noting the Dodge County Sheriff is a supporter of the former president. Yet this is going to be a political issue for a very long time now. While Democrats believe they make it easier to vote, Republicans have been wanting to nix them ever since the 2020 election. But ultimately, it's really up at the local level of what they want to do.
Yeah, the Supreme Court ruling said you can use them, you don't have to use them. Two, we're not voting the way we used to in 2020. Now, 2020 is like almost an aberration where we really rushed toward absentee voting because of the pandemic. We saw in 2022, spring of 23, people going back to their quote-unquote normal kind of process going to the polls. Still elevated from where it was pre-2020, but not the same. Same time, the mail is not as good as it used to be. If you look at the deadlines for requesting an absentee ballot, way back when I first started doing this, you could request a ballot on Friday, get it on Saturday, put in the mail on Monday, and have it there on Tuesday. That doesn't happen anymore. Looking at 2022, even with the drop in absentee ballots, there were more late ballots received by clerks in 22 than in 20, even though there were many more cast in 2020. Drop boxes, likely the reason why there are more, fewer late ones in 2020. And what kind of strikes me in talking to me about this issue is a lot of these places where are not using drop boxes are in Republican areas. Mm-hmm. Republicans keep talking about, we want our voters to vote, to cast ballots early. The more people who vote early, we're going to focus on swing voters or casual Republicans, get them to turn out for the president, former president. You're kind of undercutting or taking a tool out of the toolbox, to use Brian Schimming's words, the state GOP chair, if you don't have drop boxes in your community. Same time, I'm not sure a lot of Republicans trust drop boxes because of what they've been preached to by Donald Trump. So it's an interesting dynamic. I don't know if it's going to be definitive in this election. What I want to see is post-election, how many late ballots were there for absentee ballots, and where were they late? Are they mostly Republican areas or Democratic areas? It'd be fascinating to see how that turns out.
And don't forget, yes, you can request an absentee ballot, but there's going to be absentee in-person voting in the next few weeks that people can do that as well. So is that something that we're going to hear people like Brian Schimming encouraging people? Well, hey, if you don't really want to do this by mail or, deliver it back to your clerk's office, just go in person and watch your ballot be put in one of those little boxes where they keep them. Still, It's going to be interesting to see how many of their base actually does this, because this is something they've been encouraging, even specifically U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, over the past 2 years. Go vote early. Go do it. Meanwhile, he goes, well, I kind of like voting in person. So everyone's just a little bit different.
And look, in the filings in the Kennedy case, we saw one that had 391,000 requests for absentee ballots on record as of 7:30 a.m. on Thursday. That number's probably off because there's a delay in reporting this stuff. But if we're talking 3 million votes cast this fall, 3.5, somewhere in that neck of the woods, that's a decent chunk. You know, that's as of right now. More will come in. My guess, probably going to see a bigger boost or bigger absentee voting in person, early in person. That seems like a more preferred methodology.
All right, let's move on to our next topic, which is staying on the topic of elections, but this is about poll workers, because this week the Republican National Committee sued the city of Racine over alleging that they did not have enough Republican poll workers working the polls during the August primary. Republican parties in Milwaukee and Dane County also filed a very similar complaint back in April, accusing election officials in both those counties of doing the same thing, saying, hey, you didn't have enough Republicans. We got your tallies of looking at how many Democrats. The Racine City Clerk, in a statement, essentially dismissed the allegations, calling it meritless. And this lawsuit just comes as Republicans are trying to get more poll workers to work at the polls in the upcoming presidential election. It was earlier this year that RNC launched an effort to get out, I believe it was over 100,000 dedicated volunteers and attorneys to work the polls. That's nationwide, of course. But it's definitely, talking to Brian Schimmie and other party leaders, it's something that's worked. But these types of complaints sometimes just go nowhere.
So what happens is, in the odd-numbered year, November of it, like last year, the parties submit a list of poll workers in across the state, each community. The law says you should pull from those lists to fill your slots, based on an equal basis, make sure you're staffed. The issue is, one, it's a little different between the ones in the spring versus this one. In the spring, with Madison and Milwaukee, the complaint was with the Elections Commission that they just didn't take these folks, these Republicans. It was a disparity in who was working. The clerk said, look, we had this extra training that had to be done. They didn't respond. They didn't, like, come in and do the stuff. We couldn't use them, essentially. Those complaints still not resolved from what I saw this past week, Elections Commission. The lawsuit, a little different in that there's one more Republican worker than Democratic workers, but the majority were non-affiliated workers. And so they're saying, look, we had these 57, I think it was, Republicans who applied. You only used, like, 9 of them, something like that. Democrats had 47, used 7, something like that. This wasn't the way it's supposed to be done. I don't know it's going to go anywhere, but they're also trying to, Republicans, put the spotlight on how things are run. And two, to cynics, they're raising these issues to try and create suspicion about what's going to happen in November. We're seeing a very Democratic city. It was part of the quote-unquote Zuckerbucks 5, right, back in 2020, where the 5 largest cities in Wisconsin got money from a group largely funded by Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook founder. If you're a cynic, you think some of this might be trying to gin up, like, hey, suspicion, and there's then this capacity to say, if Trump loses Wisconsin, something was amiss. If you're a cynic.
Right. And you can't remember, it was, can't forget, I think it was Greenfield. It was back in the April election. There was election observers who were challenging every absentee ballot that came in. That didn't happen in August, but it's just something that almost you're wondering if there could be similar things that happen on November, which A, could slow up the process of ballots being counted, and B, just cause a lot more headaches for election officials as they're just trying to do their jobs, essentially. But they do have every right, those election observers, to say something if they believe something suspicious in their view is going on, or if they just want to challenge something that comes in through the doors. All right, let's move on to a non-election topic here, and we're going to talk about funding for the Universities of Wisconsin system. This comes as Governor Tony Evers defended his $800 million state budget proposal for the UW system. And this comes as there's kind of a lot of issues going on with higher ed in Wisconsin, but also nationwide, as officials here continue to grapple with rising costs, dwindling enrollment, and campus closures. Now, Evers' request was announced a few months ago, very early on, for him to talk about the 2025-2027 state budget. That's what he wants to request. But looking at this pot of money, it is the largest ever proposed in state history. However, you and I both know the GOP-controlled legislature is likely going to scale that back. But when I asked the governor about it when he toured UW-Madison today, he believes there could be possibly, with new legislative maps, there might be a change of the power dynamic here in Madison. So remains to be seen about that. But talking to the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, Representative Mark Bourne, he told me this week, it's a little excessive of what the governor's talking about. We're still going to have these discussions. So he didn't say no right away. But he overall said he wasn't impressed with the latest enrollment numbers, which we're going to get to in a little bit. And he believes cutbacks, specifically with the UW employees, needs to be addressed. Let's take a listen from Evers and Representative Bourne on this issue.
We have an obligation to make sure this system itself is in good place, and it can't be done with just nickel and diming it every year.
And if you go back and just look over like the last decade, they're down thousands of students in FTE enrollments, but yet they're up thousands of additional employees. So part of the discussion needs to be right-sizing your operation, not just new money. Part of the discussion, too, needs to be focused on workforce and the real needs of the state and not be focused on other national trends and things. And so it's more than just to say, is there inflation? Yes. So there's certainly some new costs, but there's some new spending that might not be necessary. And all that needs to be part of the discussion.
Now, Evers' argument is that he's stressing that this large sum of funding would address rising costs, like I mentioned, but also make tuition more affordable for low-income students and address some of the scholarship programs and funding some more of those. But it remains to be seen where this goes.
Yeah, so remember 2023, governor proposed about $130 million more in general purpose revenue, state aid, UW. The legislature, controlled by Republicans, approved less than $10 million. Also, by the way, they held back $32 million. They said to UW, you can come back and ask for it down the road. They got caught up in the DEI debate, where raises for UW employees were held up, along with that $32 million, along with building projects. So what I'm getting at is Republicans don't seem real enthusiastic about doing more money for UW, but the governor made this point this week of, well, might be a different dynamic next year. What he's getting at, obviously, is the Assembly. The Senate's not going to flip. There's, barring some kind of miracle, there are enough competitive seats to flip the Senate. The Assembly, there's a shot. Most people I talk to think that Harris would have to win Wisconsin by a few points and make it more likely to happen, but there's an avenue there. If the chamber flipped and you had Democrats in the Assembly and Republicans in the Senate, that would really boost UW. Mm-hmm. Much different discussion. But if Robin Voss is still in charge in the Assembly, he is adamant. He wants DEI to go away. He does not want to give more money to those efforts. That will complicate any effort to give UW more money. By the way, the process is budget requests were due this past Monday. November 20th, we'll get the first look from the Evers administration at all those requests lumped together, plus how they think this current fiscal year is going to end and how the next 2 years is going to go. Then we'll get numbers from Fiscal Bureau in January, and then we'll get a budget from the governor probably in February, and away we go to the budget process.
Away we go. Can't yes. wait. All right. Before we move on from this topic, though, just want to look at some of the latest projections from the UW system and their enrollment numbers. Take a look at your screen. No surprise, one of the largest campuses, the largest, UW-Madison, saw the biggest uptick, nearly adding 14,000 students compared to last fall. UW-Milwaukee saw a slight decline, just a little over 200 fewer students. UW-Oshkosh suffered the worst with many students not being enrolled there, about 650 fewer students. Looking at across the board, from all of the UW system branch campuses included, it was kind of a mixed bag, but this has kind of been a trend for a while. You got fewer high school students interested in going to college. That's going to be the challenge of officials going forward, to try and get students excited about going to school when it's going to cost a lot more. Some of the financial programs are harder to get into now. It's just a tough sell that more students just don't want to choose this career path. It's also worth noting that in the past year, 6 out of 13 branch campuses at UW have closed or are going to close by the end of by the end of 2025. So that is something that Rep. Bourne and other Republicans are going to be looking at when it comes to coming back to these discussions about how much the UW system has. When I also asked Bourne about, well, what do you think about these branch closures? Is it a good call? He actually agreed, because if there's not that many people there, it's about downsizing. And that's kind of what he said in his soundbite earlier. So it'll be fascinating to see what happens. But as we've noted on the show before, most of the time what agencies and the UW system request, they usually don't get all that money.
So what's interesting about these numbers is, okay, enrollment is up, but they're not telling you about the enrollment of the two-year campuses. Okay. Usually we get those numbers.
I was just going to bring that up.
So why? Well, again, the cynic might say it's because those enrollment numbers aren't great and there are more closures coming. Like one of the problems of the system for critics is a lot of redundancies. We have a tech college system, a lot of them near these two-year campuses. These two-year campuses were added to a parent campus, essentially, a few years back. Argument was it would help kids who would go to maybe Richland Center for a while or Fond du Lac up in near Oshkosh, get in a year or two, and then move over to the parent campus. Easier transition. That didn't work out so well. Fewer high school kids, fewer resources, there are some issues there. So as you're looking at these numbers for enrollment, great, they're up. But if you're not telling me about the branch campuses, it tells me there's a problem, there's a red flag that you're not talking about that's going to be an issue to watch going forward.
Right, and talking to experts who study government transparency, they called that a big problem. Mm-hmm. So when I dove into this, I even asked the governor about it earlier in the week when he was at UW-Madison. I said, do you see this as a problem? We're not having those figures. The UW system for the past five or so years have shown those two-year campus enrollment numbers. And he completely agreed with me. You know, I wish more politicians would just agree with all of us, making just a joke there. But he agreed that it's a problem. And he said UW is going to do something about it. So when I reached out to the spokesperson from UW System President Jay Rothman, they said soon, by the fall, that's a very long range, they are going to have these figures out. Now, the only reason you can get these right now is if you filed a public records request, or in the past you would just ask these universities that were usually happily able to give this information before. But like you said, back to the fact, if these numbers are out now, you know, and they're not out for the next few months, it's going to be a tougher sell to even see where they're at when it comes to even possible future closures if we don't know what's going on or if the public's not informed of how many students are currently enrolled. All right, moving on to our next topic this week is, well, more high-profile visits here in the battleground state. Of course, we had J.D. Vance earlier in the week in Eau Claire talking about immigration specifically and anti-immigration rhetoric in the city that actually has tensions over the resettlement of refugees in Eau Claire. Meanwhile, later tonight, Vice President Kamala Harris will hold a rally in Madison, and she's going to be at the Alliant Energy Center. This, of course, once again, Wisconsin's important, and these visits are not going to die down anytime soon, JR.
No, keeps us busy.
All right, let's get to stock picks this week. And rising is unemployment insurance fund. It's bouncing back.
Yeah, so obviously COVID-19 took a hit on that program. We're not back to where we were 2019 pre-pandemic, but it's bouncing back each year from the pandemic. Why that's important, companies pay a tax based on the balance in that fund, the lowest level tax right now, so they stay there. Also worth noting this week, unemployment rates came out 2.9%. Last month, more good news for Wisconsin's workforce. Things are trucking along.
All right. And mixed this week is Derek Van Orden.
Okay. So we saw a poll from the House Majority PAC, which, take it with a grain of salt, they support Democrats, and according to Rebecca Cook. It had Rebecca Cook plus two on Van Orden, 49-47. Remember, that PAC has a $4 million buy, roughly, in that race the last 2 weeks. So, okay, that poll shows it's a close race. We also saw the crystal ball at University of Virginia change this race from likely Republican to lean Republican. Okay, another good sign for Cook. But I'm not seeing, though, our Democratic groups coming and spending money right now, which makes you kind of wonder why. Now, in talking to people this week, the vibe I got was that, you know, Van Orden, he's trailing Trump a little bit in the polls that people are seeing out of the 3rd District. You might wonder, well, why? They're both Republicans. Remember, the 3rd CD for years and years and years and years was a Democratic district. I mean, Ron Klein was there for a couple of decades. There are some legacy Democrats who haven't realized they're Republicans just yet. They voted Democratic their entire lives, but they like Donald Trump. They know that. It hasn't yet translated to, like, switching their vote down ballot to a guy like Derek Van Orden. So that might be part of it. Also, Van Orden, don't forget, had a number of run-ins with people. His temper has kind of popped up and all that kind of good stuff. So is that part of it? But I still maintain, looking at that race, until I see Democratic groups spending money, not just the last 2 weeks, but the last month maybe, it's hard to buy it's truly a swing seat. Now, things could change, but I'm not seeing the ad buys just yet. One thing for Democrats that gives them a little hope is that district has about a half dozen college campuses. And talking to people about polling this week, I feel like Democrats are almost anticipating a huge turnout for college kids. And if you look at the polls that have been out last month, you see younger people really kind of like gravitating toward Harris. Mm-hmm. So go back to the Supreme Court race 2023. We went into Election Day that spring feeling like Jenna Posadich, liberal for Supreme Court, was ahead. She was ahead, mm-hmm. 5 points maybe, won by almost 11 points. The surge, people argued, was probably due to college campuses and the abortion issue. The question is, are we missing in polling right now a surge of young people on college campuses are going to turn out in November for Kamala Harris? Maybe. The flip side of that polling is, we were off in Wisconsin big time in 2020. I remember getting a briefing from the Biden campaign, like the Saturday before the election, that he was like plus 6 or 8, something like that,
yeah,
in their polling.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was 21,000 votes, roughly. The Washington Post had Biden up 17 points in Wisconsin. That was obviously wildly off.
Right.
My point is, are we also missing that quiet Trump supporter? Are they still hesitant to take mm-hmm. calls? I've seen all kinds of polling has adjusted their methodology trying to address that issue. It's a long way of saying, I'm not sure the polls are getting everybody. The reason on both sides, you got to go, there might be something happening they're not catching just yet. I'd say it's like the 3rd District. I want to see more money spent there to really buy into this. It's really, truly going to be a swing seat in November. But if you're Van Orden, that's not a great place to be to kind of feel like, okay, they've got reason to come play here now, and I've got some issues to worry about.
Right, and speaking of polling leads right into following this week, which is RFK Jr., but with the tie-in of what polls are saying, because a 1 or 2 or 3 points can make a huge difference, and if he is still on the ballot, that could take votes away from someone here in Wisconsin.
So look, he took a loss with the courts this week, all right, but he's got a second chance, maybe a third with the Appeals Court, Supreme Court, we'll see. But these 4 polls are out this week in Wisconsin. You know, again, polls are a snapshot. There's margin of error, grain of salt. But looking at them closely, if RFK is an explicit option, Trump does worse. Now the 4. AARP Wisconsin had Kennedy as an option in the question. It was 48-45 Harris. Again, margin of error, Kennedy at 2 points. Quinnipiac had 48-47 Harris. Kennedy wasn't included, okay, even though he's on the ballot. Kind of interesting. Emerson, 49-48 Harris. Well, I don't think it was an option for a third party. Marist, 49 Trump, 48 Harris and Emerson. Marist, 50 Harris, 49 Trump, 1% other. So again, 1.3. Mm-hmm. Now, margin of error, their polls, don't get excited, but 20,000 votes and change in 2020. If we are talking about 2024 being that close again, then Kennedy can make a difference, even if it's 15,000 or 20,000 votes. And who are these people who are still Kennedy fans who are going to vote for him 6 weeks from now? Granted, you know, they say they're going to vote for him now. We'll see come November what they're going to do. But Republicans spent millions of dollars all spring and early summer to pump up RFK because they said Biden's weak. This would draw people away from Biden. Legacy Democrats will say, hey, Kennedy name, all in for it. Well, now Harris is in. You look at the polls, she's consolidated almost the entire Democratic base. These Kennedy folks seem to be so many Trumpy people. You know, are they Trump folks because, are they Republicans who aren't there because they don't like Trump and they want a conservative or an alternative to like the establishment type person? Are they true RFK fans who won't go for either and won't turn out? We don't know.
Or are they double haters?
But again, if ballot comes November, and he gets a point or two, that could change the dynamic in the Wisconsin race, which is why the stakes are still high for Donald Trump.
Sure is. All right, that will do it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
I'm J.R. Ross.
And we'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.